Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Everyday Black History. I hope you all had a wonderful day today on this Thursday, and that you're getting ready for the weekend. The week is almost over if you don't have to work the weekend, so one more day and we're there. But today on Everyday Black History, we're continuing our highlight on black businessmen and women who started their empires in the hair care and skin care industries. And as mentioned yesterday, there are a lot of black men and women who started businesses and built empires based solely on the hair and skin care industry that was dedicated toward the black community. I mean, a lot of them, you know, some of them are well known, some aren't. And even as I do the research for the podcast, I'm always stumbling upon new names that I haven't seen myself and that, you know, that I'd like to bring, you know, to the podcast. I mean, we probably could spend weeks just, you know, highlighting people who made a mark in the hair care and skin care industry and their black community. And today we're going to continue that. I mean, I might end up doing more than just a week because, as I mentioned, there's so many people that I'm discovering that I hadn't known before. And today we're going to highlight two women today who made their mark in the hair and skincare industry, since we're continuing our conversation on hair. And, you know, one of the women, the first woman we're going to highlight, goes by the name of Annie Malone. And Annie Malone was a businesswoman, an inventor, a philanthropist. She was one of the first black women to become a millionaire. And I was always told that that was Madam C.J. Walker. But Annie Malone came before her. As a matter of fact, Madam C.J. Walker actually worked for her. You know, she was one of Annie Malone's proteges. And she was very successful. As mentioned, she was one of the first black women to become a millionaire. And she founded and developed a large and prominent commercial and educational enterprise that centered on cosmetics for black women specifically. Now, just a little bit of background information on her. She was born in Illinois. She was born on a farm out Mesa County, Illinois. And her father went off to fight in the Civil War. She was born in August 9th, 1877. And when her father went off to fight in the Civil War, her mother, took the couple's children, and she escaped from Kentucky because that was a border state that maintained slavery. So she found refuge in Illinois, and that's where her, Annie, who became Annie Malone at this time, she was born Annie Turnbull. She was born in Illinois, the ninth of 10 children. Now, unfortunately, she was orphaned at a young age. But she attended public school in Metropolis, Illinois, before moving in 1896 to live with an older sister in Peoria. Now, she attended high school, and even at a young age in high school, she had an interest in chemistry. But because she was frequently sick, it forced her to withdraw from classes. But even when she wasn't in school, she continued her fascination with hair and hair care. And she was always practicing hairdressing with her sister, and with her knowledge in both chemistry and hair care, she began to develop her own hair care products. Even then, during that time, women used goose fat and heavy oils, soap and bacon grease to straighten their curls, and that was damaging to both the scalp and the hair. I mean, who knew that these were used back in the 1800s to straighten hair? You know, a real, talk about rustic method, you know, that was being used. But by the 1900s, they moved with her. She moved with her siblings to what is known now as Brooklyn, Illinois. And while experimenting with hair and different hair care products, she began to develop and manufacture her own line of non-damaging hair straighteners and even special oils and hair products for African-American women. And she named her first product the Wonderful Hair Grower. And to promote this product, she sold it in bottles from door to door. And her products and sales began to revolutionize hair care methods for all, you know, black Americans. I mean, when you think of Mary Kay and Avon and all these types of companies, all of them basically just took the model that women like Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker after her, and many other successful black entrepreneurs in the hair and skincare industry adapted, just going door to door and selling and having people over and showing them the products and selling it to them directly. All those methods that you see that Avon and Mary Kay use came from, you know, women like Annie Malone. Now, she moved in 1902 to St. Louis, which was a thriving city, and she hired three assistants to help her sell her hair care products from door to door. And as a part of her marketing, she would give away treatments. She would give away to customers as like little samples to attract more customers, just so that they can see how good and how much better her products were than what they were probably already using at home. She married a couple of times. In 1902, she married a man by the name of Nelson Pope. They divorced 5 years later. And then later on in life, you know, she married another man by the name of Aaron Malone. As mentioned, she was born Annie Turnbow. When she married him, she took on his name, and that was later on in her life in 1914. He was a teacher and a religious book salesman. By the time they got married, she was already, you know, worth, you know, over $1 million, you know, so she was already a successful woman. So she truly built her empire, you know, on her own. Now, while in St. Louis, due to the high demand of her product, she opened up her first shop there in 1902. And she launched an advertising campaign in the black press. She held news conferences. She toured the southern states, and she recruited women as she went on and toured. She recruited many women that she would train personally to sell her products. And one of her selling agents was a woman by the name of Sarah Breedlove Davis, who later became known as Madam C.J. Walker when she opened up her own business. She worked for her and operated in Denver, Colorado. Now, they worked together until a disagreement led, you know, Madam C.J. Walker to leave the company and start her own business. And she took the original formula of Annie Malone's products, the original Poro formula, and she created her own brand of it. And there was one of the reasons why Annie Malone began to copyright her products under the name Poro, because she didn't want anybody imitating her products, and she wanted to discourage counterfeit versions of it. So she began to copyright, you know, the name. The name Poro was a combination of the married names of Annie Pope and her sister Laura Roberts. And because her business continued to grow and grow, by 1910, she moved to a larger facility. She built a five-story multi-purpose facility on Pine Street in St. Louis. Now, this facility, in addition to a manufacturing plant, it contained facilities for a beauty college, which she named Poro College. And the building also included a retail store where Poro products were sold. It had business offices, a 500-seat auditorium, dining and meeting rooms, a roof garden, dorms, gyms, bakeries, and even a chapel. And as you can imagine, it served as the go-to place in the black community as a center for both religious and social functions. And the curriculum at Poro College addressed, you know, the whole student. You know, they were coached in the personal style, walking, talking, on how to look and be professional when out there selling the product. And the college employed nearly 200 people in St. Louis. And throughout its school and business and franchise businesses, the college created jobs for almost 75,000 women in North and South America, Africa, and in the Philippines. So her reach expanded internationally outside of America as well. By the 1920s, Annie Turnbow Malone was a multimillionaire. And she was so rich that in 1924, she paid income tax of nearly $40,000, which was reportedly the highest in Missouri. I mean, if you were to do the inflation rate from 1924 to now, how much $40,000 is, you can imagine how big that number is. But that's just going to show you how successful she was in business. Now, even though she was extremely wealthy, she lived modestly and she gave a lot of her money away to different charities such as the Black YMCA. She gave to the Howard University's College of Medicine in D.C. She donated money to the St. Louis Colored Orphans Home, where she was the president on the board of directors from 1919 all the way to 1943. And with her help, they were able to buy a facility which was renamed in her honor in 1922. That orphan's home, as far as was known, is still in the historic Ville neighborhood. And it was upgraded and expanded. And as you mentioned, it was named in her honor. And she always made sure that her employees, all African-American employees, were paid well and were given opportunity to expand and to grow and to do better in the company and in their personal lives. Now, her business continued to thrive throughout the 1920s, and she had a few setbacks. In 1927, her husband filed for divorce, and since he was the president of the company, he demanded that half of the business value go to him. He wanted half the company because he claims that his contributions have been integral to its success. And, you know, I mean, we don't know whether or not that's true, but we do know that she was already a successful woman by the time she was married. But the divorce forced Poirot College into a court-ordered receivership. But she had support from her employees and from other powerful figures in the Black community, such as Mary McLeod Bethune, who also started her own colleges and schools for Black Americans, and as well as one of the founders of the United Negro College Fund. And she negotiated a settlement of $200,000 instead of him taking half of her business. And this affirmed her as the sole owner of Poirot College. And the divorce is granted. Now, after the divorce, she moved most of her business to Chicago, which, as we know, is a hub for Black businesses in the cosmetic industries. And she moved most of her business there at the South Parkway, where she brought an entire city block. She still was big dogging it, even after a divorce, that she had to, settle for $200,000. She still was able to buy an entire city block. Now, other lawsuits followed. In 1937, during the Depression, a former employee claimed credit for Poirot's success. And to raise money, she then sold one of her properties in St. Louis. And even though her business was smaller in size, she still continued to thrive. Despite all this, setbacks, she still continued to thrive and she still was successful. She's always, this is an example for all of us that she never let any setbacks, keep her down. She still continued to move forward and succeed. Now, she received, an honorary degree from Howard University. She was an honorary member of a Black sorority, the Zeta Phi Beta sorority. And she, lived, a long life. On May 10th, 1957, she suffered a stroke. And she died in Chicago's Provident Hospital. Now, she didn't have any children, but she bequeathed the rest of her remaining fortune and business to her nieces and nephews. And no doubt we know that she, gave a lot of money away to charity, but she left the money to whatever family that she had left, at the time of her death. But we can see that, her story and her ingenuity in business and even not letting anything hold her down is an inspiration to all of us, Black men and women of any generation, and how, despite hard times, she was able to persevere and to move forward. Now, the next woman we're going to highlight today is a woman by the name of Marjorie Joyner. Now, Marjorie Joyner was born in 1896 in Monterey, Virginia, and she was the granddaughter of a slave and a white slave owner. Now, she moved to Chicago in 1912, and she began studying cosmetology when she moved out there to Chicago. She graduated from the A.B. Moeller Beauty School in Chicago in 1916, and she was the first Black woman to achieve this. Now, that year, at the age of 20, she married a podiatrist, Robert E. Joyner, and she opened up her own salon. Now, she met Madam C.J. Walker during this time, who at this time was wildly successful, and she was the owner of her own cosmetic empire. And since Marjorie always loved women's cosmetics, she went to work for Madam C.J. Walker and oversaw 200 of her beauty schools as a national advisor. Now, one of her main roles was sending Madam C.J. Walker's hairstylist door to door, dressed in black skirts and white blouses with black satchels containing a range of beauty products that were applied in the customer's house. As I mentioned before, Madam C.J. Walker came from the school of Annie Malone, and this was her practice as well. And you can see how she continued this practice, you know, with her schools. Now, Marjorie Joyner taught some 15,000 stylists over her 50-year career. 15,000. And she was also a leader in developing new products, as she made an improvement on an invention that was already around, the permanent wave design. She came up with a design of her own, an improvement of it, and received a patent for it as well for the Madam C.J. Walker Company. She also helped to write the first cosmetology laws for the state of Illinois and founded a sorority even, the Alpha Chi Pi Omega, on October 27, 1945, as well as a National Association for Black Beauticians. She was even friends with Eleanor Roosevelt, and she helped to found the National Council of Negro Women. She was an advisor to the Democratic National Committee in the 40s. She was even advised on several New Deal agencies that were trying to reach out to black women. So she was, you know, a pillar in the community. She was a pillar in the black community, especially in the Chicago black community. She was highly visible. And she was even the head of the Chicago Defender Charity Network, which was a fundraiser for various schools in the city of Chicago. Later on, in 1987, the Smithsonian Institute in Washington even opened up an exhibit featuring her permanent wave machine and a replica of her original design. Now, a little while ago, we mentioned her invention, the permanent wave design. In 1939, she started looking for an easier way for black women to curl their hair, and she took her inspiration from a pot roast, believe it or not, that was cooking with paper pins to quicken preparation time. So she experimented initially with those paper rods, but she soon designed a table that could be used to curl or straighten hair by wrapping hair. Now, this allowed hairstyles to remain for some time, even to last several days even. Now, when she first tweaked this invention, there were complaints that from users that it was uncomfortable, so she continued to improve it with the simple idea of having a scalp protector while the lady was curling their hair. Now, as mentioned, there was already a design for this. There was the original inventor of the permanent wave or perm or whatever was designed by an English dude, Carl Nestler, and during the late 19th century, and it was patented in London in 1909 and in the U.S. in 1925. But as mentioned, she made an improvement on it, on this, and she received the patent. She put the patent in Madam C.J. Walker's name, so she didn't receive any money for it. It, you know, went to the company, but she's still credited as being the inventor for, or making the improvement for, this invention. And her design was popular in salons with both black women and white women. And the patent, as mentioned, was credited to Madam C.J. Walker's company. And but you know, she still gets credit for, you know, coming up with this idea, and just by, you know, taking inspiration from a pot roast. Now that's ingenuity right there. Now in 1967, she co-founded the United Beauty School Owners and Teachers Association. And in 1973, she was awarded a bachelor's degree in psychology from Bethune-Cookman College in Daytona Beach, Florida. Currently, her papers are in the Vivian G. Harsh Research Collection of African American History and Literature at the Chicago Public Library. And Marjorie, you know, Joyner lived a good life, a long life, and she died of heart failure in the south side of Chicago on December 27, 1994, at the age of 98 years old. So she lived a very long life, and as we can see, based off of her work, you know, 50-year career, teaching 15,000 stylists, an inventor, being able to work directly for Madam C.J. Walker, opening her own salon. She's accomplished a lot throughout her life and throughout her career, and as well is an example and an inspiration to Black men and women and entrepreneurs everywhere. And these two women that we highlighted today are definitely examples of Black excellence. And as we continue to highlight, Black businessmen and women in the hair and skincare industry, you gotta give props to those who aren't as well known as Annie Malone and Marjorie Joyner. So Annie Malone, Marjorie Joyner, we thank you both for your contribution to Black history and Black culture, and we salute you both. And that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. Tomorrow we'll be coming with another episode, because as I mentioned, there's a lot of us who contributed so much to hair and skincare throughout the century, it started way back when. Annie Malone, Marjorie Joyner, well, Annie Malone specifically started back in the late 1800s. So for over a century, we've been making strides in this industry. So tomorrow we'll be coming at you more. Tomorrow we'll be talking about Madam C.J. Walker, as we know. And if I find anybody else who I stumble upon who was an inspiration and someone who, created or invented something or started a cosmetic empire that is not as well known, we will be highlighting them as well. So just stay tuned for the next episode.